The Providence Journal presents Nick and Bob, the college basketball podcast for Rhode Island and around the nation, with your hosts, Kevin McNamara and Bill Koch.
Hello and welcome to the Providence Journal's Pick and Pop podcast. It's March. It's the NCAA tournament time. But first, we're going to wrap up the local teams, the Rhode Island Rams and Providence Friars. We actually have one team that's still alive somehow. The Brown Bears are playing on Wednesday night at the Pizzitola Sports Center against the Alabama-Birmingham Blazers.
Correct.
Hello, this is Kevin McNamara, sports columnist at the Journal, and alongside Bill Koch. Bill, you're juggling many balls today, but we're going to wrap up the local season. Nice to see you.
Kevin, great to be here. The best time of the year in college basketball, and for me, in sports, is upon us.
I'm with you. In my mind, it actually began last week with the conference tournaments, which we were both in New York for the Big East and the Atlantic 10 tournaments, and I ended up watching probably too many games as well. So there were an awful lot of good games around the country. I thought the NCAA tournament committee did a good job with their selections and seedings, but we're going to start with the Rhode Island Rams, who ended their season in a 68-51 loss at the Barclays Center in the A-10 quarterfinals.
Semifinals,
I'm sorry. I was there the day before where the Rhodey Rams beat the VCU Rams in really the most important game of the season, a 75-70. I'll start with my takeaways from the Atlantic 10 and URI's, you know, end of season. Good for them is really what the theme is. A month ago, I had people emailing me and texting me, is the coach a fraud? Is this Jerry DiGregorio 2? I think David Cox answered a lot of those questions. He got his team back on the straight and narrow down the stretch. They were more than competitive, had some really good wins at Dayton jumping out. And then, you know, they caught a little break in the A-10s. Marcus Evans, the first league guard from VCU, hurt his knee early in that ball game, and you could see VCU was not the same team, and Rhode Island, to their advantage, to their credit, really took advantage and recorded a really good win. And I think legitimately started thinking, wow, we can win this tournament. That ended late in the first half of the next game, and I'll pass it to Mr. Koch to take it from there.
Yeah, if you go back to February 22nd, they lost at home to Davidson, a 75-66 game. Rhode Island had lost five straight and seven out of eight, and they were 12-14 overall, 5-9 in the league. The season was really headed to an ugly, sort of dark place. What they did from there, winning six in a row, was a complete salvage job and something that they should feel good about going into the offseason. It's a very different tone, I would imagine, that David Cox would have had in his postseason meetings with players. And especially coming off the win over VCU. VCU lost three games to A-10 teams this year, two of them were to Rhode Island. So that speaks to the sort of talent and the ability and the ceiling with which they could play to. Keys to address going into next year, obviously, would be consistency. A lot of that had to do with their youth. They're very inconsistent.
Well, I'm going to interrupt there, Bill, because talk about the last game of the season where, boy, consistency, we certainly saw it. You know, Rhode Island jumps out to a 15-point lead in the first half?
15 late in the first half.
And then the game just changed, and good for the Bonnies, but I think that really crystallized URI's problems.
The good Rams were there for the first 16 minutes of the game. They're up 29-14 after a Tyrese Martin three-pointer. The bad Rams showed up for the last 24 minutes. They got outscored by St. Bonaventure. Let's see if my math is good here. 54-22 over the last 24 minutes of the game. And they went back to some of the habits that they were into in that losing streak, settling for quick shots, not going to the rim, not guarding the ball on defense. Just really, really struggled at that point. And, to be fair, I think they ran out of gas as well. It was their third game in 3 days. They were playing a short rotation, not really much help off the bench. And you could see the value that's gained with getting a bye in the A-10 tournament.
Oh, sure.
St. Bonaventure played one less game. St. Louis, who ended up winning the tournament, has a bunch of fifth-year seniors, a bunch of men who frankly, underachieved during the regular season, and I'm sure Travis Ford went at them and said, look, guys, what do you want your legacy to be? As an underachieving team or as a team that could make it into the NCAA tournament by winning a championship? They responded. You hope that Rhode Island can do something similar to that later on, but this goes back to when you lose at Duquesne and you have a 19-point lead and you lose at UMass and you lose at home to Fordham, mm-hmm. those games keep you out of the double bye, and that's where Rhode Island has to show growth and buckle down next season.
Yeah, and you know, in the second half of the Bonnies game, when you know your season's on the line, you know, halftime you're actually leading by 2 points, Rhode Island did revert to form and shot 28%. Had almost as many turnovers, field goals, 7, as turnovers, 5. And two of your most important guys, Fats Russell and Cyril Langevin, combined for 1 basket. Again, I don't know if that was tired legs, but clearly it was the team that we had seen too many times earlier in the year and one that needs to be avoided. And I think, you know, in wrapping up the URI season, they have basically everyone back.
Yep.
The core of the team. They're excited about their recruits. I think we learned this year that it's tough to put a lot of emphasis and responsibility on recruits. They need to be the fill-in guys. We know that Rhode Island has 3 high-quality players in Langevin, or 2 high-quality players in Langevin and Doughton, and then a true wild card in Fats Russell. And I think he will continue to develop the consistency you need. So the question is who can fill in around everybody else. I think David Cox has got to be really excited about Tyrese Martin, who had a really good freshman year. I thought he was very solid. He has to have major question marks around Jermaine Harris and around front court depth. You know, Dana Tate was good in the second half of the VCU game. Had some injury troubles late, I believe.
Yeah, toe infection. Yep. That's right.
But they do have 2 forwards who potentially could help in the front court. And I think that is really the key to the team, that they need some more scoring and versatility in their front court for next year.
Yeah, Doughton and Langevin have shown that they can lead the team. I think that's important. Russell is a swing player, obviously. You need to raise his floor. His 2-for-13s need to become 4-for-9s, mm-hmm. for example. On nights that he doesn't have it, he needs to recognize he doesn't have it, sort of rein it in a little bit and be a little bit more of a playmaker, which he showed he could be mm-hmm. at times this year. Jermaine Harris, I think, and David Cox said afterwards that he didn't anticipate any players needing any surgery. I think he might have done Jermaine Harris a little better service by just coming out very frankly and saying he played hurt all year, because I think he did. He was battling something in his left leg, he's battling something in his feet as well. Didn't necessarily show what they recruited as a top 100 player. Obviously has good touch. You know, he can shoot the ball a little bit. I need to see a guy who's going to compete more on the glass and be more physical. I can't have a guy who's being out-rebounded by Tyrese Martin and Dana Tate and Fats Russell per game. That just can't happen for a 6'9 guy who is that sort of athletic.
Yeah, no, I think that their hope for him is that he is a first-team all-league contending big guy soon. You know, I'd have a hard time believing it can be as soon as next year, and maybe a hard time believing it can be at all if he doesn't become more of a glass guy and a guy who can score inside too. And we saw glimpses of that in the non-conference. He showed an ability to score a little bit around the rim. He had a nice little jump hook that we just didn't see consistently enough. But that's a freshman. That's what you see from freshmen.
The scary thing for me with Harris is I look back to the 2 best big guys who they've had in recent seasons, Hassan Martin and Cyril Langevin, 2 best 4-year big guys.
Sure.
I don't want to include Ron Iverson
yeah.
in that, because we saw a complete career arc. We knew by the end of freshman year that Hassan Martin could be an elite defender, someone who's going to be a physical factor around the basket. We knew by the end of freshman year that Cyril Langevin could be an elite rebounder and someone who's going to be a factor around the basket. All we've seen out of Jermaine Harris really is a guy who's made a couple shots, yes, but a guy who's gotten into foul trouble and been overpowered inside by bigger, more physical, more aggressive players.
Yeah, and I think it's unfair to compare him to certain guys. He's potentially a good big guy, but he's not going to be like those two. That's not his game. That said, you know, he should be able to shoot the ball way better than Cyril, and I think he has the potential to do that. So it begs the question: is who else in the front court can step up and do that? And They have a transfer from Georgetown, Antoine Walker. And you're going to have to help me with the other guy who's sitting there who came in mid-season.
Mariel Matting.
Yep, who is as big or as wide as my pen,
right?
But also is supposed to be able to step out and shoot the ball. It'll be interesting. And obviously, Cyril's back and will be as dangerous as any big guy in the A-10 next year in his senior season. So it's not as if they need a glass eater right away. But your point's well taken, Jermaine, that's not his game. But if he's a shot maker and at 6'9", can do a lot of things, put it on the floor a little bit, that's maybe a big guy with a skill set they've never had.
Yeah, the other thing that they're going to have to look for is, a little more help in the backcourt. Omar Silverio is leaving after 1 year. I would guess that he would probably take a step down, maybe go to the NEC or the MAAC, the Metro Atlantic. I think he's a better fit there in terms of him playing defensively or taking care of the ball. Shot 32% this year, turned it over on 21% of his possessions, and really, struggled to guard anyone with any sort of quickness. So I would say that he's exactly what we thought he was going to be. He's a fill-in recruit late to, when Brendan Adams went to UConn. They need someone who's going to be able to spell Jeff Doughton and Fats Russell on the ball. If that means they can get a transfer in here, a grad transfer, who could help them in the backcourt, I think that might be a good direction to go.
Tough, could be a tough sell for a grad transfer only because Doughton is a rising senior and clearly, he's the guy. I think they need a shot maker, actually, more than a floor leader, because Doughton, you just don't want to take him out of the game. And clearly, with the one of the worst, if not, I don't know where the final stats were, but just a horrendous 3-point shooting team.
They're 351 right now, out of 353.
Okay,
so not the worst.
So they avoided the basement.
They did.
They need someone who can make some shots, and I don't see that on their bench returning, with the exception of Fats, who obviously needs to really improve his outside shooting. So, Bill, any other recruiting notes that you can throw out on the Rams? They don't have many scholarships left, besides hopefully for that extra guard that we're talking about.
Yeah, just one now.
Okay.
Four players coming in. The two true freshmen are Makai Long, who's a wing player out of the D.C. area, someone who is being billed as a defender first and who will find his offense later. Ideally, he might be able to help you next year, but I wouldn't necessarily bank on it. The other guy is Greg Hammond, a guard from Louisiana. And you wonder how many minutes he's actually going to get playing behind Doughton and Russell.
If he can make a shot, he'll have a chance.
That's the thing. You would look and people would look and they would say, well, Silverio was a shooter. Why didn't he get more time? You need to be able to do other things at a representative level.
Mm-hmm. No question. So, folks, that's it on the Rams. We're going to switch to the Providence College Friars, who last night ended their season in spectacularly bad fashion, to put it mildly. Home game in the NIT, which I thought was a bit of a bonus, a surprising bonus, and they really didn't take advantage of it in any way, shape, or form. Totally outclassed by Arkansas, 84-72. Arkansas put 42 points on the board in both the first and second halves. And you name the quality, they checked the box and Providence failed to do it. Quicker, faster, more aggressive, better shooters.
And without their best guy.
Without a lottery pick. It makes you wonder how they finished 8-10 in the SEC. And maybe when you fill out your brackets, look at those SEC teams a second time and realize they're really good. Because for that team, which, if you look at the roster, Arkansas had 9 first-year players. Hats off to the coaching staff because they did a great job with a young team because now it's the end of the year and those guys are ready to play and really help win basketball games. Arkansas moves on to a game at Indiana. Providence goes into the offseason with an awful lot of questions. I have a few close friends who are frantic about their Friars, and they called me before this podcast, and I had a couple overarching themes. I said, first of all, relax.
Mm-hmm.
It's an NIT loss.
Right.
You can't take too much away from one game. That said, my big critique of the Friars right now is we've seen them for 34 games. And what do we take away? You know, who improved? I think Nate Watson clearly improved from his freshman year. I think Malik White, by the end of the year, showed that you know, he can play big-time minutes and can put some points on the board. I think the category ends after that. And that's my concern going forward is, you know, Alpha Diallo, we know, is a good player, wildly, you know, inconsistent offensively. We saw it again last night. He was 4-for-13 with, you know, with a turnover. Missed some free throws, as he does all the time. But everybody else, you know, you want some of those guys on your team. You think they have futures. Other guys, it might be the end of the road.
Last night, you know, watching that game, I went back to something that Cooley tends to say all the time about AAU and AAU tournaments.
Yeah.
And he said, our guys are out here playing like they're in the gold bracket in the AAU tournament.
He said it again last night.
And if they lose, all that happens is they fall to the silver bracket and they still get to play. And I don't necessarily think that they bring the focus, the urgency, the energy over one concentrated 40-minute period that they need. They need to play with some desperation. They need to play with some hunger. You know, and Ed has said that in various versions over his entire tenure at Providence, to be fair,
mm-hmm.
with good teams, with not as good teams. These guys, though, for me, felt like a team that, you know, just they could have beaten a lot of teams on their schedule. They also could have lost to just about anybody. It was very inconsistent team. It's part of their youth, obviously. But it's also, I think, part of, you know, I look at some of these guys and I see great pedigree. I haven't necessarily seen great performance yet. It's almost like they expect it to happen mm-hmm. instead of making it happen.
Yeah, no, I agree 1,000%. They have a lot of players who everyone, including most importantly themselves, thought would be X, and they haven't put the time or effort into becoming X. And I get that from freshmen. You know, every freshman thinks, you know, I've been great in high school and I've been rated certainly high and the coaching staff has promised me X. So, and then reality hits. That's fine. But other guys at a place like Providence, you see if they stay for 4 years, they're either going to be frontline players or they're going to be backups. And they probably had too many backups who Cooley had to force into primetime roles because he just didn't have enough consistent players, going back to what I, you know, started off with, you know, Nate Watson and Alpha Diallo, and that was pretty much it. And Nate obviously had real defensive problems early. I'm talking in circles here, but I think Ed Cooley kind of coached in circles all season long. He never really settled on a set lineup. Last night, it was like an AAU game. He played everybody. I know in his mind he wanted to do that because it's an NIT game, but, you know, are you trying to win or are you trying to pass out a trophy to everybody? And it was in between pretty much all season that way. That said, a lot of guys got legitimate opportunities to show what they could do. Everyone from, you know, obviously David Duke got huge minutes as a freshman. Makai Ashton Langford got major minutes again at point guard. Drew Edwards, you know, certainly didn't play every game, but he toward the end of the year, he's playing a lot. And the takeaway is there's not enough there. They have a major, major hole at point guard. I know that they're going to bring in one. I think they need to bring in two because if they bring in a freshman, I don't know if the freshman's ready to play in a Big East. That's asking way too much.
Right.
They want a point guard. They want another guard who can play some point and shoot the ball because their three-point shooting is not you know, not of high quality. And they have Greg Gant, who they already signed, a forward from North Carolina, who is a very high-end athlete. He's not supposed to be a very good shooter, a three-point type shooter. He's just a good player. Well, they need, you know, last night they're, you know, everyone says, well, A.J. is going to be fine. And I do think A.J. Reese is going to be a good player. Last night he's 1-for-6, 0-for-4 from the three-point line, and he misses 3 out of 4 free throws. That's your best shooter. Well, that's a lack of focus when you miss open shots and you miss free throws and you're the best shooter on the team. That's a freshman. that can't happen. So I'm rambling here, but I could do this for an hour.
Well, no, your ramblings.
And we won't keep you for an hour,
no,
folks,
no,
by the way.
You're rambling because you're trying to talk about a subject that really didn't make much sense all season, that was a little bit scattershot all season. It would be hard to organize your thoughts around the Friars because, like you said, they had different guys out there in crunch time at given times. They had different good performances from some guys and not from other guys. They were just very inconsistent all the way through. I think if I had a couple primary takeaways, it would be this. If you're going to be a good team, Alpha Diallo can't be your go-to offensive option because he doesn't shoot the ball well enough. He does a lot of things really well. He rebounds great for his size. He's a good passer for a forward, for a wing guy. Mm-hmm. Defensively, he had six steals last night. He's clearly active at that end. But given his struggles shooting, particularly from three and at the foul line, I don't know if I want him to have the ball late in games. You need Nate Watson and A.J. Reeves to emerge as those players next year. I think they need to be your go-to guys, whether you like it or not. And in sort of off-season meetings, I would try to address that with them. I expect Reeves to make a big jump. I think he was really hindered by the fact that he missed the middle portion of the season being hurt.
Huge. And I think that changed the focus, the arc of PC's entire season.
Of the entire team. Yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. I think that that will be different next year. I think you'll see a different player there. He has great ability. And I think he's someone who can lead this team at the offensive end, and I think they'd be better for it. In terms of the rotation, I think Ed Cooley started with this in about the fourth game when he decided to put Isaiah Jackson on the bench and start Jimmy Nichols.
Yes.
And he was chasing his tail from that point on the rest of the season. Isaiah Jackson did nothing in those first three games to merit a demotion to the bench. And Jimmy Nichols did nothing in the next 10 to 15 games to merit being a starter. And I think it was very, very difficult for Ed to find a consistent lineup. And I think that's probably the most glaring example of player management where he might have gotten it wrong this year. And I think those might be some things that he and the staff are going to need to address going into next season.
No, I 1,000% in agreement. I think in practice, it was clear that A.J. Reeves, David Duke, and Jimmy Nichols were among the five best players. Six best players, for sure.
Yep.
So why don't you play your best players in the games? Makes sense. And, you know, when you're playing, I don't know who they, you know, when you're playing Iona and Central Connecticut and Albany, you can get away with that. And in the non-conference, they did get away with it. And Jimmy Nichols showed flashes in those games. But by the time it became time to win, not play in, but win the real games, they weren't ready. And then AJ gets hurt, and all of a sudden the lineups change all the time, and the rotations are different, and all you do is blow people's confidence when that happens.
Right.
And I think even today we're asking these questions because a lot of guys didn't play with confidence, and if I'm the coach next year, I'm saying in my mind, I'm playing eight guys max.
Right.
And if anyone wants to transfer at the end of the year or mid-year or not talk to me for the next month, I don't really care because this is a competitive situation and my job is to win games. Our job is to win games. And instead, and I'm not saying Cooley played everybody because he wanted to keep people happy, he couldn't find that mix.
Right.
And they need that mix.
You know, and part of this goes back to recruiting as well. If you're recruiting at Providence and at Rhode Island, it's a different calculus than if you're recruiting at Kentucky or at North Carolina. You're going to have a top 50 guy, a top 75 guy who's willing to sit on the bench there.
Right.
I'm not saying this specifically about any of Providence's players or Rhode Island's players, but generally, if you're going to recruit a top 50, top 100 guy at those two schools, you have to give every indication that he's going to be able to start right away. You're going to come in, you're going to start, you're going to play major minutes right away. I think we saw David Duke and A.J. Reeves and Jermaine Harris all in lineups right away. And whether or not they were playing well or playing poorly, I think they were going to stay there. Right. When you have older guys on the bench, and I'll look specifically at Ryan Preston at URI, Jermaine Harris was not a productive player, whether he was playing hurt, whether he was promised he was going to start, whatever it may be, was not a productive player. Everyone could see it. Tyrese Martin clearly played better than Christian Thompson. they made Tyrese Martin a starter midway through the season. No one could quibble with that.
Sure, it was clear.
It was an obvious decision.
Yeah.
In the case of Jermaine Harris, they started him. He wasn't productive. Ryan Preston sitting there thinking, when am I going to get my chance? He loses a tweet that's basically complaining about playing time.
Right.
Your culture ends up taking a hit at that point. You might have some player unrest at that point. If you're a Providence, you have 10 or 11 guys who think that they should play, and at times in the year are given playing time, suggesting that they probably should play, you're going to have a difficult time settling on 7 or 8 guys down the stretch when it really matters and the games are really important.
Yeah, and Providence, to their credit, has elevated their recruiting into the middle or the upper middle of the Big East. They don't have two top 50, top 100 kids. They have basically a team of them. Gant
right.
is the top. You know, they would have next year 7 or 8 of them. Now, what people miss is that Xavier has 7 or 8 of them, and Villanova has a whole team of them, and Seton Hall has a chunk of them. That gets you into the game. That doesn't guarantee you wins. But to your point, those kids think that they're going to play. But Dean Smith, the great Dean Smith, we're going to wrap up here soon, used to say, when someone who I recruited who isn't playing is unhappy, that's his problem. That's not my problem.
Right.
My job is to play the best players and win games. And as long as I give everyone the opportunity, and there's no one on this team who can complain that they didn't have the opportunity, in my eyes anyways, excuse me, you play the best guys.
Right.
That's it for the Friars. We're going to wrap up quickly here. We're going to address Brown. Brown in the CBI against UAB without their most talented, far from their best, but their most talented player in Desmond Cambridge. Dropped a bomb on the Bears in the last day or two. Wants to transfer. Will not play tonight. Clearly a loss for Brown, but I'm not convinced how much of a loss it is, Bill. And I'll get to that.
Yeah, you know, this is a difficult one, obviously. A guy who, you know, in the non-conference was super. Really, really played well. You know, in particular, game at Canisius, game at San Diego State, game at Marist. He was great in all three of those. A scorer unlike what Brown often sees. A guy who's just so naturally talented, can do so many things physically. Not the type of guy that you're normally going to get up on Thayer Street. You know, for him to leave, obviously leaves a big hole next year. Mike Martin has most of his guys back. I would assume he's looking at making a run at that top four in the Ivy League. They almost got there this season. They beat Penn in the last game of the year, and they would have been there. So this is certainly a blow. And I think, you know, regardless of Cambridge's performance in Ivy League games, his inconsistency shooting the ball, you never want to see talent like that walk out the door.
No, can't disagree with that. I referred to him as an excellent building block, but the people who went on and on about his great talent and mentioned the letters NBA next to his name did him such a disservice, because first of all, he wasn't nearly as good this year as last year as a freshman. In Ivy games, when they count, he shot 26% from the floor, 24% from the three-point line. That is not a great player. That is not a player who can transfer to a high-end school and play. I think he is doing such a disservice to himself by leaving. First of all, he's not going to get a Brown education. And second of all, I can't wait to find out where he's going to go, because I just see a bad situation brewing here.
I think he's going to end up somewhere really good. I think people will look at the talent and they'll say, if he plays in our system...
What's the talent when you shoot 26% from the floor?
They're going to look and they're going to say, if he plays in our system surrounded by better guys and the opposing game plan isn't all about him, he's going to be fine.
I wish him well.
I expect him to land at a Power 5, an annual NCAA, an annual top 25 contender.
He's not going to be in the rotation for those teams.
Well, he's got a year in residence.
Yeah.
His junior year, maybe play a little. His senior year, he'll be the man.
I think a lot of people like Desmond more than I do, and hopefully I'm wrong, because I don't wish, you know, ill will to anyone, and I certainly would love to see him, you know, thrive somewhere else. But horrendous shot selection this year. Probably one of the most selfish players I've seen in a long time with his shot selection. And I give Mike Martin a lot of credit for giving him the longest rope that any coach should have to give any player.
He certainly had that.
He had to be a difficult teammate to play with. And that Brown is on the verge of setting a school record for wins with their, quote, best player shooting 26% from the floor in Ivy League games. That says a lot. But anyways, that's enough about Dez. He won't be here in the future. And Brown versus UAB tonight. Bill, we're going to be back on Thursday with a NCAA tournament podcast. And I know we're excited about hopefully providing the fans with some winners.
Just a reminder, folks, that any picks that we make, we take no fiscal responsibility for those. If you decide to go to our friends at Twin River and lay down a few shekels on some of these games, don't come complaining to us if they don't come in.